Welcome to the Home Team Podcast. Steve Carter here with my good friend, Sam Acho. This podcast exists because we want to talk about the intersection between faith and sports and culture and family. And today, our friend, Trey Burton, he's in the Bahamas. And when I was on vacation, you all went on my Instagram, posted palm trees and umbrellas. Please go and do likewise. I'll remind you at the end of the show. But today's show, we got a lot of things to chop up. I mean, we got to talk about Naomi Osaka's brave move. We got to talk about the NFL announcement regarding race norming. We got to talk about NBA fans. They are just getting crazier and crazier. We got to talk about Coach K. And we also got to finish up with a little conversation about, is this going to be LeBron's first ever first round playoff exit? Sam, what do you want to talk about first?
Trey Burton. First and foremost, we got to talk about this dude, Trey Burton, is in the Bahamas. And shout out to vacation. Yes, I'm happy. But the moment that Steve was not around, Trey said, hey, I got to say this. Everybody drop the palm tree emoji. So every single one of our listeners, I will ask nothing else of you for the next 30 seconds. After that, I'm going to ask a lot more. Go. It's at Trey Burton 8 on Instagram, or just type in his name. Whatever picture you see, whether you got a picture of him fishing up there, picture of the home team, whatever you see, drop some palm tree emojis. Show him some love. Let him know he's missed. Let him know he's loved. You know what I mean? That's our way of saying, hey, Trey, we love you. We miss you. You better enjoy yourself. But this is a little bit of payback. So let's pay the kid back.
We got to pay that guy back, man, because we just got to keep him humble. Got to keep him humble. Hey, let's talk about Naomi Osaka. I feel like she made an incredibly brave move. And I know that, you know, over the last couple of years, Sam, you and I, we've chopped it up many, many times about the importance of mental health. And really, I don't remember a time in tennis where someone was this brave and this clear. I'd love to hear from you. When you heard about her decision to come forward and say, hey, I got to step back from all of this. Like, she's the highest paid female athlete right now. I mean, made $55 million in the last 12 months. I mean, she is crushing. And yet she first and foremost recognizes I'm a human before I'm an athlete. But when you heard her say what she did and you heard the responses, like what did you think about it?
First things first, it's not a part of her job.
Yeah.
So wow. people, let me just make this clear. So people say, well, a part of your responsibilities as an athlete, and I've been an athlete, pro athlete, and even a part of your responsibilities as a, you know, tennis player, when you sign up, you know that media is a part of the job or part of the responsibilities. That's what people say. And they say, well, hey, it'd be an unfair advantage if you don't do media and everyone else does. That's what people say, right? But who's driving the league? Who is everyone there to watch? Who is winning championships? Who's getting all the interviews? It's Naomi Osaka. It's people like Naomi Osaka. When I was in the NFL, yes, media responsibilities and requirements are, quote, in quotes. They don't see me. I got air quotes. They're a part of the job. But who's getting all the interviews? It ain't me. It's the quarterback. It's Tom Brady. It's the star wide receiver. It's the star running back. It's Marshawn Lynch at the Super Bowl. No one's asking, you know, the fourth, fifth string guy. No one's asking the defensive lineman questions every single quarterback side answer questions every single day. Well, hey, you're an athlete, it's a part of the job, but it's not an unfair advantage that she doesn't have to do interviews, because most people aren't getting interviewed in the first place. Most people aren't, you know what I mean? And so for her to say, hey, like, this is affecting my mental health, number one, I was proud of her. I was excited from Jump Street, like, let's go, let's eat, this is great. And then she doubled down when she was about to get fined. She was like, I'm good. Like, and then she's like, hey, this is why. And then I heard someone else say, well, Stephen A. Smith, he said, Naomi Osaka, this works because you explain why. You have to tell us why you're going through what you're going through. I disagree. why does Naomi Osaka have to tell everybody why, tell the media, the country, hey, this is what, hey guys, I've been going through depression, anxiety. It's like, I shouldn't have to tell everybody why. Maybe I'll tell the people at Wimbledon, or tell like the higher ups why, if they listen, and maybe they listen and maybe they don't. And so anyways, I'm proud of her. Like that's the bravest thing you can do. Cause one thing she could have done would have been to just not do it and just been the bad guy and just not shown up and take the fine or kick me out. Another thing she could have done is the Marshawn Lynch approach and just literally shown up and said, I'm just here so I don't get fined. And she would have looked like the bad guy. But she said, you know what? There's something more important than a tennis racket. There's something more important than a story. My sanity is more important. And I know we're not supposed to do this, but I'll do it anyway. Like, not even supposed to, but like people, we're talking about NBA. We've talked about NBA and the fans like spitting on players, throwing bottles at players, jumping on the court, running on the court recklessly and getting cheered on and celebrated. Yeah, and even maybe getting booed, but getting attention. And then people have said, well, hey, it's a part of the job. Like you're getting paid millions of dollars, so just deal with it. No, that's not a part of the job. And some might argue, well, those are different, Sam. These fans are being reckless, whatever. But there is a school of thought that says, hey, guys, you're getting paid all this money. Put up with it. We own you. We run this. You're not in control. We are. And I'm so proud of Naomi for sitting and saying, no, there is something more important than an interview. And, oh, by the way, all y'all other bozos who are saying in tennis, who are saying, you know, like who was it, the French Open, who tweeted out, these people knew their assignment. I don't know if y'all saw that tweet.
Yeah.
They tweeted out and they left Naomi Osaka out, insinuating that, well, they knew the job was to do interviews. Those people aren't getting interviewed like Naomi Osaka is getting interviewed.
Right.
So there's a different standard. And so, yeah, so
we've got this weird fascination in our culture that we almost love building people up and then watching them implode. I mean, we like there's a part of us that loves the train wreck of Johnny Manziel. There's a part of us that loves the train wreck of some guy who just seems mythical on the court or on the field, or some woman who's able to do all of these incredible, you know, moves, and they just kind of step into more and more of the limelight. And then if we get a sense that they have too much cockiness or too much hubris, then we feel like it's our job to help and hope that they fall. And the bigger the fall, the more TMZ drama it is, and we eat it up. And then if they repent well or they go through this process, then we'll build them back up. And I just sit there and go, good on Naomi for being able to see the wall and not give people what they're trying to, unfortunately, manufacture in this young woman's life. She's 23 years old, and she used the word, like in my opinion, she uses a word that I try and teach my kids all the time, and the word is agency. You have agency. You have agency to make decisions. You have agency to say no. You have agency to say yes. You have agency. And she used her human agency and said, no, can't do it. I don't care. This is not worth it. And I saw this tweet from Omar Sakur. I believe that's how you say his last name. It says, imagine if the response to Osaka had been, we're sorry that you're struggling. Of course you can skip the post-match press. We can also have counselors made available also. Perhaps there's a more suitable way for you to communicate with press. Let's discuss when you're ready. I mean, it's a both win. I mean, it's a win-win, like for the French Open, it's a win for the press, but it's a win for Naomi. And what do the fans want? We want to see Naomi. We want to see her play, but we don't want to see her. We got to protect her so that she can be the very best on the court. And gosh, like I was so taken back by that courage just to, I don't know, like you said, stand up for what she knew to be true for herself.
And even because in her tweet explaining herself, which I'm glad that she did, I hate that people say, okay, yeah, that's now I'm going to get off your back because you explain the hell you've been going through.
Right.
You explain the hell you've been going through to me. Because I don't owe you an explanation, but I'm glad she did. It's just almost like I wish that, and I lost my train of thought, maybe out of anger and frustration. Yeah. Right. But, like she explained herself and she's like, dude, I'm super shy. Like, I don't like cameras. Yeah. I'm very introvert. I don't like doing interviews. But she happens to be really, really good at tennis.
Yeah.
Like the best in the world. And interviews and being in front of cameras and all these things happens to be part of the thing. So it's like, do you want her to pick one? Hey, I'm so good at tennis, but since y'all are going to make me do this, I'm just not going to play and starve the world of like her majesty and her talent. Or like Steve, like you just said from the guy who tweeted, or is it like, hey, like we want you a part of this thing and we understand everyone's different. Is there a better way to handle this? Like, that's what I'm trying to do. Even with, like you said, like with kids or at work or whatever, I'm trying to figure out how to do better. There's an example in football, 2018, playing for the Bears, tore my pec. Week 3 or week 4, I was out for the season. One of my coaches, I'm not going to name him, but one of my coaches was like, yeah, man, this is great. I don't think he wanted me to play that much. He's like, yeah, this is great, man. You can come and lead and all the things. You know, the other coach said, oh, man, Sam, this will be great because you could like watch all this film and help the guys get ready. And even though you're not, you could be like an extra coach on the field and like go through all this stuff and help us and lead us and the players and da da da. And initially I was like, shaking my head, like, yeah, sure. Like, okay. But I was going through some stuff then, man. Like my wife was going through some stuff. Like our family was going through some stuff. We just had a baby with some complications. That was super scary. I'd started going to counseling and going to therapy. Like I was trying to figure out like who, like I was going through some stuff and I didn't want to watch copious hours of film to share it with guys who aren't going to listen to me. Like I've been in the room. I know what it's like to watch the film on your own versus having someone else watch it for you. And then you just give them tips that they're not going to listen to. And so I think I pulled a Naomi Osaka, if I'm being honest, because initially I said, all right, coach, yeah, y'all do it. I'm excited. And that first weekend, I sat at home while the whole team went to go play, turned my TV on. I watched film of the next week's opponent hours. Because you know me, I'm going to give it my all. It's not a 3-hour game. I spent 6 hours or so, like every little thing. What can I catch or watch or whatever? On a Sunday. So instead of hanging out with my wife and our little baby and all that, I'm like studying this film. I'm like, this can't be it. And so the next day I went up to my coach a few days later after talking to my counselor, because I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And he's like, what if you just told the coach what you're going through? So I know it sounds like I'm flipping on what I said earlier, but what if you just told him what you were going through? And I did. So I went up to the coach and I said, hey coach, like I want to be a part of this team. And I want to serve and I want to help a coach. Like I need to be around my family right now. Like it's just been a really hard season. Like I need to be around my wife and my kids. And yes, I want to be in part of all the meetings. I want to sit in the meeting. I want to learn. I want to help. I want to serve. I even want to travel to games if you all would allow me after I heal from my injury. But like I have a torn, I need to heal physically, mentally. Like there's been a lot going. I need to heal emotionally. I need to heal. And I think I probably ended with like, I'm sorry. And he looked at me, he's like, Sam, no. And imagine if this would have been the response that the French Open and the fans had. He said, Sam, no, I just wanted you to feel like you were a part of the team. That's the only reason. Like, I care about you. I don't care about this film. I don't care about, I love you. And I just offered this because I wanted you to feel like you weren't alone. And so Sam, if that's what's best for you, then go for it. And all of a sudden, it was this beautiful interaction where I wasn't watching the film all weekend while I'm at home. My team, like I was sad that I wasn't playing, right. And I'm over here, you know. But I got a chance to go to meetings. I couldn't go to practice because I had to do rehab, but went to meetings. Once my rehab got better, I went to practice. Once I was able to move my arm, I actually got a chance to travel to games. We were doing those Bible studies beforehand, supporting the guys. Like, it was beautiful and it was holy because it was pure. Yeah. And I just feel like, and I don't even know all the ins and outs, Naomi very well may have done that to the higher ups. And they may have said, well, sorry, we're not going to treat anybody different. And so her last card may have been, hey, people, let me withdraw. Yeah. Right. If my coach would have been like, hey, Sam, sorry, injured or not, you're getting paid. And so you need to do this job. I mean, what, either I do it and be miserable and maybe skip the counseling and because I don't have to, or maybe just be mad and sad and angry all day. Or I say, well, all right, coach, well, I'm just going to go home. Thanks. I'm retiring. You know what I mean? So like I applaud her bravery and her courage because 99 out of 100 people would not have done what she did. She's sacrificing money, sacrificing fame, sacrificing image, sacrificing reputation. And people are just pouring it on her negatively. And I think if we could just take a step back and think about people as people.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, you're a star, you're an athlete, you're a statistic. I was talking with Tadashi about this on my Athletes for Justice podcast a couple of days ago. Like, what if we saw like George Floyd's mother, like these people who were losing their loved ones, what if we saw their moms crying out and instead of saying, well, it's just he was high and drunk. Or other side saying, no, Black Lives Matter. You know, it's like, what if we loved her first?
Yeah.
Let's love her first. And also addressed every single injustice, every single one, instead of just lumping them all together. These are all the same. So it is what it is. It's like, no, like Naomi's hurting.
Yeah.
And she's different than other people. Her life has been out there and culturally and generationally, it's different. Roger Federer is what, 40 something? It ain't the same.
Yeah.
His generation is different than Naomi's. With social media and with image and with school and just with the things that people go through, it's a completely different generation.
And even just as a woman and as a woman of color, you know, so if a woman of color speaks up and says what she wants, she's a diva, she's angry, you know, who does she think she is?
Notice who came to her defense. Serena Williams was one of the people who came to her defense.
Right.
Because she's lived it.
She lived it.
A white man, you know, Roger Federer could say whatever he wants. Andre Agassi, you know, former, he could say whatever he wants. But as soon as Serena speaks up, she's getting fined and getting, you know, it's like, I say the same, like Federer says the same stuff.
Yeah.
Yet I speak, is it because I'm a woman?
Yeah.
And you have different experts. Is it because I'm a woman of color? They do the same thing. And to your point, you talked about culture loves seeing people rise, not even see, helping them rise just so they can tear them down. Maybe they don't even know they're doing it. I was doing some research on, there's a war in Nigeria. There's so much turmoil going on in Nigeria right now, like in the world, but specifically in Nigeria. I got friends and family there. Like there's like another war, on the verge of another war. And 40 years ago, however long it was, a little over 40 years ago, almost 50 years ago, my dad fought in the Civil War of Nigeria. It's called the Biafran War. And some people say it was the first televised war between 1967 and 70. There's arguments that it was the first televised war. And as I was watching, some people were saying, and the argument is, well, long story short, people were saying, no one wants to, like, war is entertainment. When we watch it on TV, it's entertainment. People aren't like, oh, I hope we, it's like, wow, this people being torn down and built up and like, it's entertainment. And so when I think about like what's going on with Naomi, and they may not have been the best parallel, right? I'm not trying to downplay what people have gone through in wars, but sometimes people watch that, see people getting killed on TV. Black people now getting killed. It's like, as much as you hate to say it, like it's getting high ratings. People are eating it up. Let's put it that way. It's not appalling. It's interesting. And so I just hate it. And also I hate that just people are ready to come out of the woodworks just to attack. Like I sent out a tweet about something. And I don't know, like I'll be tweeting. Sometimes people, I feel like people don't even respond to my tweets. I'm like, cool, no big deal. Nobody cares. And I sent one tweet that people took out of context, and all of a sudden out of the woodworks, people I didn't even know existed were like, how could you say this? Who are you? F you. How kind of, and I'm like, oh, y'all just be just waiting in the wings to come out and attack and tear down, yeah. You know? And so part of me is like, yeah, go ahead and cancel me. What are you canceling me from, guys? I'm retired from the NFL. So, you know what I mean? But it's like, yeah, like people are just ready to tear down as opposed to build up.
Well, and it's also amazing because I guarantee you, Naomi has people in her corner who are speaking about the opportunities, the financial opportunities, the responsibilities to advertisements, like all of this stuff that she probably has. And this is why we got to have people in our inner circle who can remind us that no, what matters is your mental health, your emotional health, your spiritual health, your physical health, you know, and you see, you know, LeBron dropping 7 figures on like his physical health, on what he consumes in his body, from his chef to his working out. But like, but there's a huge, huge part. And I think for every one of us, whether we're a professional athlete or not, whether we're a pastor or not, whether we're just working in the marketplace, whether we're a mom or not, like we need people in our lives who can validate our experience mentally, who can say, hey, asking us the hard questions, encouraging us to take agency, that's actually going to provide more health for us and health for those around us. And I don't know who that was in Naomi's life. It might've just been just her, but I can almost imagine all of the pressure that her skill and physical abilities were putting on her. And she probably had some people who said, hey, do this. It's the braver thing. This is what you want to do. Do it. And someday I look forward to hearing who some of those people were. But man, she's a strong woman.
Yeah. And it could have been her parents.
Yeah, totally.
Could have been her parents. Could have been a really good friend. I remember when I was going through some of my stuff, leaving football and figuring out what's next. Like I was playing with the Bills, and I remember it was the last preseason game, and it was the night before the game, or a couple of days before the game. They were kind of close to each other, so the second to last. And I was in the hotel, and out of nowhere, I'm watching something on TV, on ESPN. There was this kind of thing that just people, some girl was getting picked on and bullied, and just something. It just hit me, and out of nowhere, I just started breaking down and crying. And I'm like, this is weird. Like, what is, y'all see stuff like this all the time. What is going on? I didn't realize, but I was going through like some emotional stuff myself of like breaking away from this football thing that I'd done for so long. My identity had been in this thing. And now all of a sudden I felt it leaving. With that team, I wasn't playing a ton. I was at the bottom of the depth chart. Usually I was at the top. It was just like something was missing. And I remember after that game, we had one more game left. And it was like in 2 or 3 days. And I called my friend. I was driving up to the facility. I called my buddy and I said, dude, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I don't know if I want to play anymore. And I'd never really voiced that out to anyone. Society would have been like, it's your responsibility. There's so much on the line. Da, 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 da. You signed up. You knew. My friend said, well, shoot, just retire. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, just retire. You're in your car right now. Just turn around, go home, call the coach and say, hey, I'm done. I said, what do you mean? I didn't realize I had agency. I didn't even know I had a choice. I applaud Naomi Osaka for showing us all that we have a choice.
Yes.
And she made the right one, hands down. I don't care what anybody else says. I'm like, how can I let her know? Naomi, if you're listening, you made the right choice.
Yeah.
And anyone who's been going through depression, anxiety, fear of failure, whatever, you have agency.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody else says. And maybe you have a mom, maybe you have a dad, maybe you have a friend, but if not, let me and Steve Carter be the people that tell you, you have a choice.
Yeah.
your mental health matters. Your physical health matters. We've had friends who've been in abusive relationships. Physical health matters. You don't have to stay.
Yeah.
You have a choice.
You know, Sam, maybe we should just stay. I know we had like huge hopes to like hit NBA fans, which we sort of did. We'll end with a little bit of LeBron and Coach K. But I think staying with this mental health conversation, but flipping it to a really, really frustrating report that came out of yesterday that was talking about the NFL and something known as race norming. And how race norming was used in the 2013 concussion settlement. And for me, like I start thinking about when I started to hear about this, my buddy, Adam Deegan, he texted me and he goes, "Steve, dude, you guys got to talk about this on the podcast." And again, I don't know very much about this. I started reading about this yesterday, but basically USA Today AP articles started to drop that the NFL says it will halt the use of race norming, which assumed Black players started out with lower cognitive functioning. Now, again, this is not my words. This was in an AP article that assumed Black players started out with lower cognitive functioning in a $1 billion settlement of brain injury claims. The practice had made it harder for Black players to qualify. And I'm reading this going, there's no way. Like the NFL actually was using race norming and believing in a sport where 70% of the athletes are Black, now had a way when these Black athletes were saying, "Hey, I'm concussed." Well, they were going, "Well, you already started at a lower cognitive level. So now you're saying that you're impaired, but the impairment really is only this much because you've got a lower cognitive level. So we're only going to pay you out this much." And literally when I say this much, it's literally nothing. Nothing. And so like you sit here and I'm thinking a $1 billion settlement, people are getting paid, but then you look at the system for how things are being created so that players get paid and they're not getting paid, which makes me ask the question, Sam Acho, number one, who got paid? And number two, what in the world is going on? I don't know. I just like it. Like the more I even start talking about it, it gets me so worked up that, okay, I'm going to put Roger Goodell on blast right now. I'm sorry. I'm going off cuff right now. We probably will edit this out. Dude's on the stage at the NFL draft hugging every player. 70% of those players are people of color. And I just sit here and go, dude, if this was the framework, I need Roger Goodell to stand up on a stage and say, "Hey, I'm so sorry. Under my watch, race norming was seen as okay." I mean, the lawyer for the players in the article came out and apologized. But when is Roger Goodell going to apologize? Like for me, like when are the families who of these players who are walking around struggling with the effects of being concussed, but now they have been fighting, longing, hoping to get more resources. But because of race norming, because of some way in which we showed up and said, well, Black players, they are cognitively less than mentally, so we don't have to really pay them. Come on. Like, I got questions. I got so many questions. Sam, give me your thoughts on this.
You know, it hadn't actually really hit me. Like I read the article and sometimes things take a while to settle in for me because I'm just so used to it. It's like, oh yeah, not surprised. Race norming, players aren't getting, Black people and players are being treated differently than the white, not surprised. But even listening to you say it, I mean, I feel it. I remember training for the NFL Combine in 2011 in Naples, Florida. Approximate age, average age of people living in Naples was like maybe between 55 and 65, probably 85 or 90% white people. And we got about 17 athletes, 15 of them are black, 14 are black. And we're going and we're training and we're going to some, it was like a gym, a normal gym, like a gym. And some older white lady saw us and started to berate us. And I remember getting so frustrated because I was like, bro, this is the reason I tried to study so hard and go to the best schools and like give my all to disprove this theory that says black people are not as smart as white people. And no matter how hard I tried race norming, no matter how many black people break the, you know, you talk about the glass ceiling for women, it's for black people too. No matter how many black people break through race norming. I was talking with a lady who does work on the south side of Chicago, a place where black people don't get opportunity. Chicago's the most segregated city in the United States, maybe in the world, but in the United States, Chicago, right? Top three city, Chicago, segregated. Schools are segregated, everything's segregated. And so these kids in these schools, these black kids in these schools that because of redlining, because of housing policies, because of tax policies, there's no investment in their schools. People think, oh, they're dumb. These black people are dumb. This lady, Jennifer, who I was talking to, black woman, police officer, served for 25 years, started a nonprofit called Future Ties. She didn't subscribe to that thinking. And so she actually took a black kid from the community. She said, go, I want you to apply for this school. It was like a St. Ignatius or whatever, some private Catholic school. Take the test. Pass the test with flying colors. And now she's graduating and going to college. Brilliant. Like killed all the, did amazing on all the tests. What if black people got the same opportunity as white people when it comes to school and education? I wonder if race norming would even be a thing. Like, I think at my core, because when I first heard it, I'm like, okay, what happened? I called a dude up at the NFLPA. What's the issue? Tell me more reasoning. And he said, well, here's what happened. NFLPA, Players Association, wasn't involved in this settlement. It was lawyers hired by former players, because NFLPA, their main job is for current players and negotiating, not former players. So I'm like, okay, former players are screwed, number one. And then number two, so they hired this lawyer, and the lawyer negotiated this $1 billion settlement in a way where they just took the first offer that the NFL gave them, even if it included something like race norming. And you want to know who got paid first? These lawyers for these players who are hurting. And yes, I know you did say that the lawyer came out and said, yes, this is wrong. But what he said before that, when players were complaining, after he got paid, and players, black players were saying, hey, this isn't fair. Like if you got to take this test, like I got 100, or let's say, you know, call it out, I got 1,000 on this test, and my white counterpart got 1,000 as well. And he's getting the settlement and I'm not. And I'm hurting, dementia, struggling, concussions, suicide, like that. And the lawyer was like, I don't see any, his initial statement was, I don't see any difference in race. I don't see the, it's not happening.
Wow.
He already got paid. Wow. I did my job. Yeah. I got my money. And then now, like our friend Sam Ponder always says and used to say, follow the money. Now these black people aren't getting, black players, they're not getting paid. They're going through, people are trying to file. It's not getting accepted. Sorry, you were already, your cognitive ability was just lower. So the fact that you scored 1,000 out of, let's say it's out of 5,000 or 3,000, the fact that you scored 1,000, the most you could have got was 1,200 anyways. So, right. And then the only way, and then my last little thing, the only way that this got done, two things. Number one, players went back and sued the NFL and sued like this settlement, saying this settlement's not fair. Otherwise, the NFL wouldn't have moved. They sued them. And then the wives of the players, the families of these players who are hurting, came up and said, nah, this is real. And no one was listening. Lawyers weren't listening. NFL, nobody was listening. They went and got a 50,000 petitions, dropped it on the front of the courthouse or whatever, whatever the city hall, whatever. And all of a sudden people said, oh, let's do something. If it weren't for those wives, if it weren't for those families, those men would be dead. And we would just say, oh, well, it is what it is. Race norming.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And so sometimes I don't want to get overly emotional about stuff like this so I can speak to people from a logical standpoint. But from a logical standpoint, you can't even be mad at the NFL because their lawyers are trying to get the payout as small as possible. Logically, the NFL players' lawyers should have been trying to get more. But who are they getting more for? They're getting more for themselves. And so, like, if you think about it from a purely business perspective, the NFL's job isn't to get all these players all their money. Go get a good lawyer. Let your lawyer do that. My job is to protect the brand. And so, like, that's where, and I'm going to go here, that's where, like, I tweeted something the other day after doing a ton of research and even talking with people, really listening, like one of the youngest Holocaust survivors, name is Tova Friedman. She was one year old when the war started, World War II started. And like she lived through the Holocaust. Their town had 15,000 people before, after it was down to like, I don't know if it was 500. I don't know what the number was. I forget now. But long story short, one of the youngest living survivors. And she said, yo, like these Nazis, these Germans, like people who did the Holocaust, they're some of the smartest people. As when it comes to like bright minds, they were so systematic in how they would destroy us. These are some of the, she said, like the brightest minds. So not smart, like, oh, good, smart or good, but they're intelligent in how they destroy. And so like when we think of evil, it's not like dumb people are doing evil. Like intelligent people are systematically going about and doing evil. One of my buddies was talking about consulting. He was like, yeah, dude, some of these consultants, like you get paid to like, it's not always the holiest of jobs, right? What's the way I can, I mean, we got this, you know, problem with oil and water, you know what I mean? Like, and animals are being killed. Like, what's the way we can mitigate this to protect us and our brand? It's not about the best for all. It's about what helps us and our brand. I know it seems like I'm kind of all over the place. If I could just land the plane, I think I'm most mad at the lawyers for the players who didn't do what was best for the players, but they did what was best for their pocketbooks. And that's very surface level, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hear that. And, you know, hearing you speak, the thought that came to my mind was, I don't know if you remember when Jon Stewart, he's the Comedy Central host of The Daily Show before Trevor Noah, and has, you know, he's NYC through and through, and 9/11 really affected him. He has a very, very close relationship with the firefighters and the firefighters who were the first responders and who ran into the building, who survived and who inhaled so much of the dust and the debris. And Congress had given money out to for those first responders, for NYC Fire Department, who basically said, hey, we're going to go out and help these people. And as they're having the effects 15, 20 years later, they had this fund. But the fund was running out. And Congress was thinking that they were not going to refill that money. And John Stewart showed up at Congress and gave one of the most impassioned speeches on behalf of the firefighters. And he just was like, how can we do this? How can we do this to our country? How can we do this? These women and men were willing to risk it all. Like, we're not going to do the same for them. Like I just remember watching it going, gosh, like I just thought this guy was funny. I thought he was really, really smart. I didn't know how much he cared for these firefighters. To think about those wives and those family members and those 50,000 notes. I think the hard part for me though is if we are still playing at a level where we think that there is a certain race that does not have the same mental capacity as another race, whatever we produce is going to be wrong. Whatever we produce, because it's going to be created from a less than approach. It is going to be created from a self-preservation. And I just think going, man, like this is where for me, I agree with you. The lawyers for the former players got it wrong. And I just go, but we as to protect the shield in the best possible way, we gotta clean out all of the stuff that is gonna create a place where race norming can actually live. It just can't be. It just can't be. And I don't know. Like I just feel like somebody's got to get up on a and pull a John Stewart for these players, because these former players, you know. And I'm grateful for, again, these wives. I mean, I feel like this is a show of just reminding us once again the power of women, because Naomi, these wives just standing up and saying no, there's a better way. I don't know. And Sam, I appreciate what you're saying, because I think for so many of us, like in our it gets so easy for us to get into the self-preservation mode. And how's this going to affect me? How's this going to affect my image? How's this going to affect my company? How's this going to affect my pocketbook? But man, like we got to just be people who do the right thing and just do the right thing. So,
I just wonder, cause nobody knew about this, not nobody, but this just became news. Like, I wonder, okay, how much more of race norming is going on?
Wow.
And how do we get rid of it? Not just in the NFL, but in schools,
I mean, it's an interesting thing. I mean, there's so many places that this can go. I mean, in regards to Danny Ainge steps down, Brad Stevens moves up to his position, you know, Stephen A. Smith, like on ESPN, loses his ever loving mind. And I think in many ways, for right reasons, it walks off the stage, like, just this sense of, we see this with Eric Bieniemy, with Byron Leftwich, you and I, we've chopped this up about coaching. We see this in so many sectors that you just kind of go, okay, what's the real reason? What's the reason why we're not putting people of color in positions of power? Why have we normalized that, like, it's okay for them to be an athlete but not be X, Y, or Z? And I just go, that's gotta be obliterated. They're just, it's again, just these little biases that have creeped in that I go, man, it is around us. It'll be fascinating. Let's just talk Coach K. Coach K steps up and says, you know, probably the, you know, arguably he and John Wooden, two greatest coaches in college basketball on the men's side. You sit there and you go, okay, he's going to step down, you know, leading candidates, you know, are thrown out, John Shire. But then you've got some former players like Capel up in Pitt. You've got Tommy Amaker. You got Johnny Dawkins. Those three are people of color. I mean, you got Steve Wojciechowski, who was at Marquette. So if you want to keep it in the family, or You know, dark horse. You want to go with our buddy Boomer Roberts?
Boomer Roberts, baby.
Come on, man. But I sit here and I go, it's going to be interesting what Duke University does. What did Coach K Institute, who do they hire? Who do they go? So again, who have they given opportunities to, and who's done the work outside of Duke who can come back? I mean, all of this, it's going to be fascinating to watch. Fascinating to watch.
Yeah, people think that people actually think that black people are dumber than white people. Actually, I mean, even like, because I'm thinking like some of these coaches, let's say like, okay, race norming, let's say some of the coaches who I've been around, or some of these owners who I've been around, they wouldn't be outraged or upset. They're like, oh yeah, you know, yeah, you know. And then they're like, man, but this white coach, John Shire, he's the next Brad Steve. He's the next Coach K. He's the next whatever. How come Juwan Howard can't be? How come? I mean, the list goes on and on of players that can't be. How come it always has to be the white candidate, the young white man who's the next great guy? That's where I'm all, and I've seen in the NFL, we talk about this all the time we talk about it often with the Rooney Rule and coaches. Like, you hear, man, this is the next Belichick or the next whatever. And then they go and they struggle and they fail. Like, there were actually statistics that showed that black coaches won more games, were better coaches, if winning is the statistic, than white coaches. Yet they were being hired at a lower rate and fired faster, even though they averaged more wins statistically than their white counterparts. That's how the Rooney Rule even got in place, because some people sued the NFL and said, this isn't fair. This is discrimination. We're getting fired, yet we're winning games and winning seasons. And also, we're not getting hired after more wins. We're getting looked over. You know, Sean Desai, he's an Indian American coach. Ain't too many Indian coaches in the NFL. He's just as smart. He's one of the sharpest dudes you'll meet. Yet when it was names that were being brought up for next head coach or next coordinator, it was, you know, this young white coach, he's the guy. This guy is brilliant. He's the next this and the next that. But Sean Desai, year in and year out, kept on getting looked over. Finally, I just said something. I was like, man, bump it. I'm going to say something. Like, because I tweeted out how, man, this other coach, he's the smartest. He's the best. People are like, wow, Sam Macho thinks. Oh, and oh, by the way, Sean Desai is too. So just let's throw that out there. Oh, by the way, Todd Bowles, Eric Bieniemy. Oh, by the way, you know. And then people say, well, let's see what he does. Let's see if he succeeds or fails. Let's give him an opportunity to succeed, right? You might give somebody a position, but give them no reign, no opportunity, no agency, if you will. So it's like, well, look, Todd Bowles in New York, black coach. He was the head coach. New York failed. They didn't. He wasn't in charge of the roster. He couldn't pick who was on his team. He had no leeway. Go to Texas. Look at the University of Texas. Charlie Strong, we got our black coach opportunity. He failed. You know what the boosters were saying? Like, somebody said something yesterday, and I didn't know I would agree, but I agree. Somebody on ESPN was talking about the Texas program and how, like, Texas is not relevant at all. And first I was like, wait, what? Then I listened to his reasoning, and this dude said, as long as these 15 to 20 billionaires, white billionaires are pulling these strings, not even white billionaires. He didn't say that, but he said, let me just say what he said. As long as these billionaires are the ones running the show and these coaches have to report to them, Texas isn't going to be relevant. Nick Saban didn't report to anybody. You know, like, Urban Meyer didn't report to anybody. And so I just say that to say, like, and he's right. Yes, Charlie Strong felt that, but really it's this whole deal of, like, follow the money. The reason Texas, and I'm a Longhorn. I went to Texas. The reason we haven't been relevant in 15 years, 12 years, 13 years, whatever, 2009, the money. These boosters aren't going to allow a coach to be successful. It's like, no, you do it our way. We saw what happened with the Eyes of Texas, the song, where the school, the president, the coach, Tom Herman, specifically chose the boosters over the players. And then when the players came out and said, hey, some people have said, you're never going to get a job in Texas if you keep on talking about this fight song. this fight's on with racist origins, this racist fight. Just leave it alone. And the player said, they told us that. And president, head coach, I never heard that. I'm lying now. I'm making this up now. So anyways, I know I kind of seem like I'm kind of all over the place here, but it's like, man, like it's just all related.
And all of it has effect on us and our mental and emotional and spiritual well-being. You know what I mean? And I think, I mean, again, you're kind of wrapping this up. I think for like a Naomi, like to say, hey, like, I see where all this is going. I see the wall, and I got to actually make I got to take ground and make a statement. I think the problem when I go back to the race norming things is people did not have the foresight. They could just follow them, and it could be protecting of their resources and their assets at the cost and the expense of another person. And they had some way of thinking that legitimized their already preconceived notions, which is wrong. And so like for me, it's watching this kind of going, okay, this is the world that we live in. And there are incredibly great white coaches, and there are some really, really incredible coaches of color. And we want people to have ample opportunity to do what they do. We want that. The problem is if there's thinking that is not great, that is creating outcomes that are just not good and holy, man, it's just, it's not what God wants. It's not good. It's not good for humanity. And again, like I love it. Because in this podcast, we can chop this stuff up. We can talk about it. We can talk about it openly and honestly. We can kind of talk about how fans right now are losing their minds. Hey, can I just do a quick PSA announcement? If you are going to watch your favorite team play in the NBA playoffs, don't just have two beers and then go run on the court. Or don't just hold a water bottle and as the opposing player is walking off the court, think that you can throw it at them. Don't be that guy. Don't be banned from an NBA arena for the rest of your life. Don't be that guy. Be wise. Be wise and sit down and just experience some incredible people doing and playing a game they love. Don't jack it up for all of us because I don't want the bubble to happen again. So that's my PSA announcement, Sam Acho. I'm sorry. I just had to get that off my chest. And lastly, I think this is LeBron James' first round playoff exit. I think the Suns are going to win. I'm sorry.
Are you saying that because you live in Phoenix?
I'm saying that because I don't think AD can play game six. And I'm saying that because I just think right now, LeBron and the rest of the Lakers look tired. They look tired. And I think LeBron is unbelievable. I think it's unfair how we treat LeBron. I mean, I'm a Clippers fan. Kawhi missed a three, which was a bad shot, airballed. Nobody says anything except Rajon Rondo. But LeBron, if he would have missed that shot, I mean, that would have been hot take after hot take after hot take, how he's not good enough. I just think this is too much of a task to put on his shoulders. Can he do it? I think he can. I just don't think at 37, 38, this is possible for him. I just think the Suns are too young, too feisty, too fearless. And Chris Paul, hopefully, I'm hoping he's okay. If he's okay, game over, series over.
Reminder, this is my PSA. Go to Trey Burton's Instagram. Or Twitter, ideally Instagram. If you don't have it, go to Twitter. Find him on Facebook. Maybe he has a TikTok. Palm tree emojis, everyone. I'll do it now. Steve will do it as well.
Yes.
Palm tree emojis. And if you have the wherewithal to type, just say, enjoy your vacation. Hope you're enjoying the beach.
If you like pina coladas.
Hey.
Come on, Trey Burton. Enjoy your time. Much love, everyone. We will be back next Thursday. Hope you have a great week. Grace and peace. Go Clips. Go Suns.